You're listening to the Cash and Burn podcast, and I'm your host, Brandon Metcalf. Join me as I interview and have conversations with founders and leaders about the greatest obstacles and challenges they've faced while building their businesses. Learn how they overcame them and ultimately what made them successful. The podcast is brought to you by Place. Place is a B2B SaaS customer subscription management, billing, forecasting, and metrics platform powered by Salesforce. Growing SaaS businesses use Place to better align their revenue and finance teams so they can boost revenue growth and retention, manage renewals, collect cash faster, and make more informed decisions all directly inside of Salesforce. Hey everyone, welcome back to Cash and Burn. Today I have a Salesforce, somewhat Salesforce legend, I think at this point is what how I classify you. Mr. Mike Davis, the CRO at Invisory. How are you, Mike?
Doing well. Good to talk to you again, Brandon.
I say legend because your name is definitely talked a lot about positively throughout the Salesforce ecosystem. So I'm excited to have you on and to get in what we're going to talk about. But before we dive into all of that, why don't you share with the audience who you are and what they should know?
Awesome. Well, hey, everyone. I'm Mike Davis. Grew up in upstate New York, but live in Colorado these days. I've just kind of fallen in love with the Salesforce ecosystem, specifically from an ISV perspective. So software companies that have built apps that either fill gaps or build vertical SaaS for Salesforce or on the Salesforce platform. And so after I graduated from university, SUNY Oswego in upstate New York, an internship with a Salesforce ISV called Centiv turned into a full-time job. And I started out in customer support and training. During the 08 financial crisis, that company was fire sold to a direct competitor called Exactly. And another Salesforce ecosystem ISV, spent 7 years there, filled a bunch of different roles. One of my favorite times was working alongside a good friend of mine, Andy Drogo, to bring a version of Exactly's incentive comp solution to Native Force. It was called Exactly Express. That had some really good market success. It was really early days of figuring things out like TrialForce and AppExchange. And so learned a lot there and then specialized. I was a sales engineer for a while, SMB AE, mid-market, enterprise AE. And then shortly after IPO, went to Conga right after the Insight Ventures investment, where JP Leggett and I were kind of like the first enterprise reps, like trying to figure out alongside Steve Woodworth and Gary Stom, trying to figure out like how to co-sell with Salesforce. Conga had all of these sensational logos, some of the largest companies in the world that would use us for a little niche. And so try to figure out how to co-sell with Salesforce sellers and SEs and system integrators. And then I went to a bootstrap startup to head up sales and customer success and demand gen for a while called TaskRay, a bootstrapped startup from 2.5 million ARR. That company, after 4 years and a lot of learning and a lot of fun to do things in a capital efficient way, sold to private equity. The founders, Blake Lee, Graham, Eric Wu, and Mike Tetlow, chose to exit the business. So then, I'm going on a bit, but I think it all will add context. And then I founded a company called GTM Guides. It was a boutique consultancy because I looked around and I was like, well, what have I done? I've done Salesforce ISV things. So maybe there's a market to help other ISVs and work with a bunch of them at the same time. And so started that business, ran it for a while, and then exited in February of 2023 to Invisory, where now I head up sales and marketing there.
So when, because you know, obviously my background and your background, we play in a lot of the same circles. When did you start in the ecosystem? What year?
That would have been 2007, 2008. And then really got plugged in around 2010, I would say, was when we like launched Exactly Express. And I got like fully ingrained in the in the App Exchange world.
Yeah, so our world's similar. So I started building talent over in, I think, late 2008, early 2009. And it was the wild, wild west of building on the Salesforce platform back in those days, which was, it's been fun to learn and see it, how much it's evolved since then. It's a whole different animal.
Absolutely.
And JP was on the show. JP was on the show a few episodes ago, which was a funny episode because we were recording in his office and the internet went out. So he ran to a coffee shop. So, of course, with the magic of editing, you didn't know it if you listened to the show. But if you watched the YouTube, he all of a sudden has two different backgrounds. But he also knows his way around the Salesforce ecosystem really well. So fun. Well, let's talk a little bit about then, like, you've been around the block a bit with all things Salesforce, but all things general tech, like, as well, like, especially with the sales roles that you've been in, and the growth that you've seen. I know that's led to some interesting stories of challenges and setbacks that you've seen. Like, what can you share with us?
Yeah, I feel really fortunate. Like, my career, no intention to it. Never thought I would found a company. Never thought I would sell that company. I thought I was building a lifestyle consulting business. So, like, just a series of, like, super fortunate, like, outcomes in that regard. But I really think a lot of, like, my approach to sales was, sales and marketing and alliances was based on, like, my early career being in customer support and seeing what that side of the world would look like. And it taught me a lot about empathy, and we were dealing with incentive comp. And so when you had a customer support call, it's emotional when you're messing with people's money. Just understanding and empathizing that, and then bringing that forward, and regardless of what you sell, regardless of who you're co-selling with, what marketplace you're in, the people on the other end of the phone, at your customer, at your partner, have their own stuff going on in their personal life, no doubt, but also professional goals as well. And so just, like, being, like, hyper aware of that, and, like, not taking yourself or business that seriously, like, we're not saving anybody's lives. Most of us, unless we work in healthcare, SaaS, like, nobody's going to die if something doesn't go well. But, like, it's also serious stuff too.
So with that, though, I mean, like, what are some of the lessons that you think you've learned? So, like, TaskRay, for example. So, like, when you started there, I think when we were doing our prep show, we were talking about a lot around marketing attribution and how you approached it and some of the changes that happened in that organization. Like, what's that about?
Yeah, we had a fractional CFO who came on full time, Andrew Walker, Walker Texas Ranger is what I referred to him as. But he came to me shortly after he joined full time, and he was like, "All right, Mike, like, if I give you $30,000, where are you going to spend it? And how much do you get out the other side of it?" And I was like, "I don't really know." So I worked with our RevOps consultant to go super deep to three levels of marketing attribution to look at, like, all right, let's get totally dialed on which campaigns and which family of campaigns turn out the most revenue on the other side. And we were running it for a bit. It was super labor intensive to maintain. And at the end of it, turns out marketing attribution is really hard. And at best, it's opaque, because do you rely on the first touch to get them into your lead funnel? Do you rely on the last touch that happened before they converted to an opportunity? Or do you rely on the last touch before they went closed one or commit in your funnel? And all of those answers, you could argue and debate on which could be most important or where the weighting is. And at the end of the day, you're not going to get it right. So I think the lesson learned was, like, don't overcook it. We overcooked it a bit. So it wasted some cycles where, like, it's never going to be pristine, at least not with current tech.
Yeah, I mean, so what was the ICP that you guys were selling to?
We're somewhat horizontal, and I'll share more about that in a second. But Andrew helped us uncover was that our sweet spot where our net dollar retention was strongest, and I'm talking over 120% net dollar retention, was healthcare companies, specifically med device and manufacturing companies, both in the enterprise business segment.
Okay. And then did the process of what you were going through to realize that this attribution focus that you were doing, like, did that change the ICP, or like how did you get on the path of growth of getting past this?
No, I think it was just learning for me, good enough is good enough from a marketing attribution standpoint. Like, don't try to get to perfect. And if somebody's listening to this and feels like they did get to perfect, please reach out. I would love to see a demo of what you're doing, because I'm not convinced that it's achievable. So that was like my learning on the job, for sure there. Really the churn analysis that Andrew did, like, we had some gut feel about it, but like doing like cohort analysis and looking by employee size, by region, and by industry, that's what helped us with our focus.
Yeah, we did a lot. We did something similar at Place, where we were both looking at churn, but we were also looking at deals that didn't buy once they were in pipeline and why. And we spent a lot of time actually interviewing prospects of like, okay, why did you, we're not going to try to oversell you. Like, this isn't like a recapture call. This is just genuinely learning, which was pretty amazing, because most of the prospects that we reached out to, they were actually accommodating, and I'm happy to spend 30 minutes with you. But that taught us a lot about, you know, not only the ICP, but the perception that companies had when they were viewing us to try to educate on what we did and what we didn't do, and completely changed our entire marketing approach of, wait, they think we do something we don't, because of the words we're using and the experience they have on the website and all that. So, you know, we spent a lot of time trying to figure attribution out as well, like, and just sounds like did something similar to you guys of like, okay, let's just take a step back and let's look at the facts that we have and have some meaningful conversations about those and see what we can actually pull together and move forward. And it's helped us a lot. We're still rolling out our whole strategy, but it's definitely changed the game.
I'm curious to you. I know you're interviewing me, but I'll interview you as well. I feel like founders don't prioritize talking to customers and prospects in that lens, because it's different than talking to them in a sales process and all that stuff, like interviewing. And I'll be happy to share Project Connection that we did at TaskRay, which was super illuminating. But like, I'm curious how you guys, quote unquote, like found some religion around talking to customers. Do you remember that genesis?
I don't like to lose. I hate losing. And, you know, I mean, we started off, Places had an interesting journey where we started off wanting to solve financial forecasting inside of Salesforce, which even Salesforce is like, you're kind of crazy if you think you're going to solve that in Salesforce. We're like, we think there's a there, because the foundational thesis is still the same thesis of like, look, everyone who is in the sales and revenue producing teams and customer support producing teams, all of that, they need to have a deep understanding of what the financial relationship is with the customers that they're servicing. It's going to make them do their job better. I also have a belief that everyone in the company should have an understanding of financially how well the company's doing or how well the company's not doing, to give everyone visibility and trust and confidence of where we're going and also why we're spending money, why we're not spending money. And I've always looked at, maybe it's just from my first company with Talent Rover, building and operating on a system on Salesforce for staffing firms, that I've always looked at Salesforce as an operating system. And, you know, if you look at all the acquisitions and all the things they're doing now, it's truly in that lens. So why would you not bring finance into that mix? You know, what we learned is finance doesn't really appreciate or understand or use, I don't know what the right word is, Salesforce. Like, it's not their system. It's usually sales data that isn't oftentimes trusted, and there's just tons of different things. So like the whole mindset of finance doing FP&A inside of Salesforce was the biggest challenge that we needed to overcome. But we were using it. I was using it. And with Talent Rover, we'd created all these financial models that we were doing in Excel, which is why I wanted to build it in Salesforce. I'm like, all this data is in Salesforce as long as we connect to the accounting system. So we were using it. I was getting value. I'm like, we have all these great charts and metrics that tell you everything about running a SaaS company. Why in the world are people not buying this? So that was the genesis of, I'm just going to talk to people. Like, they're all of these people are early stage SaaS companies. Like, these are my people. Like, this is what I'm doing. This is what they're doing. And just have conversations. So just tell me why. Like, what'd you like? What'd you not like? Who'd you buy? What'd you not buy? For the longest time, like 50% of the deals we lost, companies bought nothing. We spent a ton of time just educating the market on, hey, there's a different way you can do this stuff. But what it wasn't really doing is it wasn't really giving us the true outcomes that we were solving for clients. Like, why do they actually need to do this? Which, you know, changed our whole direction with the company, where that was in 2020-ish. We were having those conversations or started those conversations, and we've maintained doing this. And then 2021, from those conversations, we realized, wait, we need to do RevRec and we need to do billing inside of Salesforce to bring finance more into the loop. And then beginning of 2022, a customer actually told us, they're like, you're missing the boat. I need to be able to manage bookings with this. Because I got into a disagreement with the customer, which is never a fun position, but it was a really healthy one. It ended really well, where he approached me saying our ARR reports were wrong. I'm like, there's no way. So I pulled up his QuickBooks. I looked at his QuickBooks. I did the analysis myself, manual. I'm like, our reports are exactly right. He's like, I'm not talking about what's on the P&L. I'm talking about contracted or booked ARR. And it was just like this epiphany of like, wow, we missed the boat from a core product functionality we need to have, which, you know, completely changed the direction of the company. But, you know, the reason why I started having the conversations is I just wanted to know, like, why are you not seeing what I see? And I think as a second time founder, I can appreciate doing that more. I don't know if I would have done that at Talent Rover, because I don't know if my ego would have let me say, I don't have all the answers. Why would I not just talk to people who would use the product to understand why, and make changes that need to be made?
Love that. Yeah. And at TaskRay, one of our core values was connection. And that was always like the one that resonated the most with me. When I started GTM Guides, actually, before I started GTM Guides, I interviewed about 20 different people to figure out if there was a there, and then continuing to iterate on it. But I want to share a story about like connecting with customers in something that we called Project Connection at TaskRay. And so it was within my first year, we had a decent level of gross churn, like decent being bad. And we were, at the time, we were horizontal project management. So we didn't see a use case. We didn't see an industry we didn't like. We were horizontal. If you had a repeatable business process you wanted to do in Salesforce, TaskRay was the right solution. And I remember going out to San Francisco with Blakely Graham, one of the founders of TaskRay, amazing human being. And we got a meeting with Dan Darcy when he was still at Salesforce and Mike Rosenbaum when he was still at Salesforce. But I particularly remember the Dan Darcy meeting and like us showing him our new like light rebrand about horizontal project management. And like he kicked us in the teeth in the nicest way possible. And I'm forever grateful for to him for that. I don't even know if he remembers it, but he was just like super authentic, super genuine, and just told us to like go out and talk to customers. And so that was like a reason we went back. And then we planned a trip, and Mike Tetlow and Eric Wu came to some of the cities with us, but we hit 5 different cities, 20, 30 clients, somewhere in that realm, just within this niche of customer onboarding. So post-sale, what happens next? And of course, that's a variation of project management, but it's a really particular use case where you look at opportunity data in Salesforce and then generate the right project based on the region, based on the product sold, all that stuff. And it was great. We did it in a month and a half. Like, it was definitely hard work. We sat down with every customer for like an hour and a half and just interviewed them, some prospects, some closed loss, some churns as well. So get that good mix. But I mean, geez, we probably only invested like 10K in that and sat down with customers, developed closer relationships with them, and then spawned out like a true rebrand and a true brand focus that helped us reduce churn, improve growth, and get us on the path to an exit to private equity. So I love it. It was amazing. And I would encourage anybody to do it who's listening.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, to your point, it doesn't really cost you anything. And most of the time, people are willing to talk to you and give you some insight if you can be clever about what you're trying to gain from them. And you know, one of the techniques I would suggest is don't load your questions in a way that they're going to answer how you want them to answer. Really let them just speak to you. And you know, I think a good software company, we'll be able to figure out how to solution to solve the real problem their customer's talking about have that they have. I know at Talent River, when we first launched, customer would say it needs to do X, Y, and Z, and we would go build it as X, Y, and Z. And that taught me a lot about like, no, truly listen to your customer, but it's our job to figure out what they're actually asking for, not theirs. They just want the problem solved. But yeah, I mean, just listening to people. And it's the same thing, even like on a different talking point with your internal teams as well. Like, I love this concept of stay interviews where, you know, you actually meet with your team on a frequent basis to find out why they actually work there. Not because they're doing anything wrong, but just like, why are you here? What motivates you? What excites you? What can we do better? Versus doing what most companies do, which is just an exit interview as to why are you breaking up with me? Why are we ending this? Versus like why are you coming every day? And it's a similar mindset, right? Of like understanding what your prospects and your customers want, but also understanding what your employees want, just makes you run better. So building off of all of that though, so you went from TaskRay, you guys grew like it was a bootstrap company, right?
Yeah, fully bootstrapped. Never a dollar loan or VC or even angel. Like fully bootstrapped. 11-year journey for the founders. 10-year, 9-year. I don't know, give or take. I was only there for 4 of the years, so I got to come in when it was like already a good idea.
Impressive. I mean, bootstrapping is brutally hard, especially in all things SaaS. So you rode that out. You went through the sale. How did you come up with GTM guides?
Yeah, I was talking to an ISV. Well, actually, like probably to overshare a little bit, I had hired into demand a little bit in 2020, so right before the pandemic, and I grew my team out in sales and marketing, and so as a bootstrap business, we were razor thin on what we were planning, and we did not anticipate a global pandemic and a couple month shutdown. And so my team was heavily impacted by a layoff we had to do. So I went to Blakely and suggested, my wife was an educator at the time. She's a counselor and a therapist, but she was doing it for schools, and so she's off in the summer, and it was around June timeframe. And so I was like, why don't I go down to 4 days a week? It helps on the expense side. I thought I was gonna like hang out, hike, and bike with my wife here in Colorado all summer, every Friday, but turns out I can't sit still. And so I started talking to people, and folks would ask me for best practices advice because TaskRay really knew what they were doing from a Salesforce ecosystem perspective, and I spent my career in it. And then just I thought other people were doing this. I thought everybody else was already had this idea, and so I like chewed on it for a while, and then started talking to folks. And Blakely gave me her blessing to kind of do it in public. And forever grateful for that. So, was able to start it, and as a side hustle, one day a week for a bit, and then that turned into more than my full-time gig. And again, really good customer outcomes from all the way from small founders to publicly traded SaaS companies and everything in between. And so, we were a boutique consulting firm that would help folks go to market across the three pillars of, going to market in the Salesforce ecosystem, direct to your customers, the Salesforce customers, co-selling with Salesforce AEs and SEs, architects as well. And then the network of 2,500 registered system integrators, and how do you co-sell with them? And so that developed into a lovely lifestyle business. Deanna Quirk, who's now our CMO at Advisory, she was consulting for a while, doing side hustle stuff for GTM Guides. I got her to come on full time before Patrick Cronin approached us to join Advisory earlier this year.
What was it like starting your own thing and building it in definitely interesting economic times?
It was so fun. I'm like a EOS rocks guy. Like, prioritization is really important to me, whether you do OKRs or BT moms, whatever it is, like, do something. And so people would ask us, like, hey, can you help us with recruiting, or can you do fractional alliances, and can you do this, can you do that? And like, by doing that planning, even when we were super small, it was just me full time and like some folks contracting, like staying laser focused was really important. But I mean, it was great. Like, I figured out so much stuff that I never thought I would learn, and started a podcast, and that's been super fun. You've been on that too. Thank you for that. That was a long time ago, but thank you. Started a no-cost ISV Slack community where people can just kind of collaborate and share. That's up to almost 800 or 900 members. Like, started a blog. It's just been really enjoyable to like share, because my like philosophy is, I've spent years in technology and most of it in sales, is like, I'm a believer that if you help people do their jobs for free, they'll eventually pay you money. And so if we can help them, and we continue that with Advisory too, we help folks, whether or not they pay for us, for our services and our software, we help them, and then like eventually we're going to build trust, and they're going to purchase one of our solutions.
Yeah, no, it is, as cliche as it sounds, that is kind of like the nature of the Salesforce ecosystem as well. People just genuinely help each other. Definitely made quite the career out of that focus, which is a good segue into a question that I always like to ask on the show. Like, what do you think, like, other founders or other execs, like, what should people be focused on right now?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, if you haven't, and that's where like the customer connection can come in and like help bring some objectivity to a decision like this, but niching down and getting laser focused on what you're best at. And you're going to have to give up some focus, and you're going to have to say no to some deals, or you're going to have to delay some stuff, but like really getting focused on one or two niches, and then measuring the performance of those. It's hard, it's tough to do, but it's awesome. So that would be one thing. And then the other thing is, and this is what we do at Advisory as well, but I've been fortunate that I've learned a lot about the growth of these ecosystems, but look at partner ecosystems. And so obviously the AppExchange, that's where I've spent my career, but Amazon AWS, Microsoft's Azure partner marketplace, then you have GCP, Snowflake, Databricks, ServiceNow, HubSpot. Like, obviously, if you interoperate with a certain system a lot, like a technical integration could make sense to explore. That one's kind of makes sense. That's where like Salesforce makes sense, or ServiceNow makes sense. But the growth of the transactability in these cloud marketplaces is something that I don't think ISVs appreciate what's going on there. And so in any given month, just this summer, so assuming this is going to grow a bit towards the back end of the year, but on both the AWS and Azure marketplaces, we're seeing about 300 new ISV listings a month. And so really big growth and like massive growth for in the billions of dollars being transacted through those marketplaces. And so as a founder, as a software company, if your back end is built on Azure, AWS, or GCP, and so incremental revenue drives consumption of your service, then it makes sense to look at least at that marketplace that your infrastructure is built on. Because how it works is like in most cases, people can purchase your software if they have a committed spend to AWS or Azure. If they have a committed spend, like they can transact and buy your stuff, and that goes against their committed spend for Azure or AWS. And so from a procurement vehicle perspective, and not to get overly meta, but like I think when people committed to their dollars at the beginning of this year or even last year, depending on when they signed their agreements, they probably expected it to be a bit rosier than it is right now.
That's an understatement.
and so chances are right now in the back half of this year, they're probably under consuming on their committed allocations. And so as you're selling to these companies, arming your sales reps, having them ask their buyer, like, hey, do you guys have a committed Amazon spend? Do you have a committed Azure spend? Because you could maybe shake loose some budget dollars that might be free.
Yeah, I mean, that's smart because I think everyone's going through that same thing. And it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this year shakes out because there does feel like there's more movement. Pipeline starting to open up. And there's just more optimism seeming all around. So hopefully that holds true. Well, Mike, we are out of time. So I knew it was going to go fast with you. Thanks for coming on and thanks for all the things you're doing.
Thank you for having me. This was super fun. And yeah, really good to reconnect, Brandon.
Cool. Everyone else, Cash and Burn comes out every Tuesday, so we'll see you next week.